Thanks for tuning in to the Boiler Express podcast. Join us each week as we dive into all things Purdue sports. You'll hear in-depth analysis of our previous and upcoming games, as well as interviews with players and people involved in the Purdue sports fandom. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and YouTube for our live stream shows as well.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Boiler Express podcast. Hope you guys are all doing great tonight. Today was a really good day. Today we got to hear from Coach Odom himself, got to hear from Babinski, learned a little bit about Odom's contract, what that looks like. Just got to kind of hear more about Odom's philosophies and the kind of guy he is, or the coach that he is, and everything. We're going to talk about the transfer portal tonight, maybe some wish lists, where certain Purdue players are kind of at in the portal right now. Talking about basketball. So lots to talk about tonight. I'm excited to get into it, but, Frank, where do you want to start at? You want to start with football or basketball?
I think there's a lot of news, on the football front, and probably maybe more to talk about there. So I think that's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess the first thing that I even noticed, just getting to watch the introduction and the presser this morning, and I don't want to compare too much to Walters's introduction or anything, but it was, Dylan brought up a good point of just the sheer difference in when Walters was hired versus Odom. I feel like they went with all the bells and whistles. They brought down the big Jumbotron and everything, and had his name on it. They opened up Mackey Arena to the public. And I felt like Walters was a little bit more private, a little bit more closed off. So that was super interesting to me. And I think that spoke to me a lot about just how invested they are, I feel like, in Coach Odom.
Yeah, I thought the same. And I tried to be fair, and I tried to think about like the circumstances under which Walters was hired. I mean, he basically had to hit the ground running. And while I'm sure things are similar for Barry Odom, it's probably not as dire in terms of, you need to do stuff right now. But I mean, he does have a lot to do. He has a lot on his plate. He's got to hire coordinators. He's got to get staff. He's got to get players. He's got to try to keep players. I mean, but it was interesting to see that stark kind of contrast. The fact that they did hold it at Mackey, had a pretty good turnout.
Had a really good turnout. Mm-hmm.
But
what do you think about, I'll answer your question first. I really like him. I think that if you kind of put if you auto-generated a coach, like if you had AI create a coach for Purdue football that really embodied the values of just Purdue, in general, your blue collar, hard nose, as Chris likes to say, lunch pail kind of guy, I think Barry Odom is what you would get. So I really liked it. He doesn't mince his words. I think he says what he means, and he's very direct. And what I found really interesting too was just his unwavering commitment to him saying that we are going to win. This is not a rebuild. We are going to have success. My goal is for championships. He didn't flat out say the college football playoff. He said having a seat at the table. But obviously that's what he was talking about there. So very, very confident. Not that you want your coach to be this is a really bad situation that I'm in, and it's going to take a while. But I feel like he was almost he really stuck to his guns. Not just he didn't really do any blanket statements. He was very direct and very this is going to happen. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah, and I think with Coach Walters, the one thing to compare the two is that they both have a lot of confidence in themselves, but it comes out in very different ways. Mm-hmm. And Coach Odom, it's very much a this is what you get, you take it or leave it sort of approach. And I like that. I like the fact that he's talked about his success. He's not bragging, but, he mentioned that he was able to have a successful couple of seasons at UNLV with very, very little financial backing. And that's one thing that was talked about extensively in the press conference, was that we do have a more competitive NIL situation. And I applaud Brian Neuber for directly asking the question, can we put a dollar figure on that? And of course they said no. Babinski did say, and I was impressed by this, that it's not a hard dollar amount. It's not a, this is our football budget and it is written in stone. It is a as needed basis. So if we need more, there will be more. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And I think you maybe mentioned it or somebody did in our group chat of just maybe what Walters was thinking while he was reading the paper or listening to the video, if he did, who knows. But to hear such an unwavering commitment to football, not that there wasn't commitment to it last time, but to say basically, I mean, in one way or another, basically saying like Odom's got a blank checkbook and we'll do whatever we have to do to get the coaches that we need and, you know, bring in the players that we need as well. So, and that's something too, that I think not just Odom and Babinski, but everybody, Meng Chang, Mike Berghoff, everybody that went up there was very, really pushed that like, we are committed to football. We are committed to athletics. And we're going to invest. I think Meng Chang said, we're going to invest in athletics more than Purdue ever has.
That's interesting. And I think that's really, really good to say right now when, you know, the average fan, let's say, isn't feeling great, isn't in a position where they are feeling confident in the university's backing. So to say that and to basically offer that reassurance was what was really cool. But I did want to ask a question. It's been talked about, it's been rumored. Some friends at the pod, you know, provided this information to us, but it seems as if Coach Odom is kind of a hard-nosed guy, and supposedly, according to rumors, he kicked some players out of his introductory meeting with the players for being on their phone and, you know, for not paying attention. How do you feel about that? Are you okay with that? Do you think that's crossing the line?
Yeah, I think it was like being late, being on your phone, stuff like that. I think that it's a, I mean, so overall, I like it. Overall, I like that, like, hey, we're setting a standard here. This is a business, basically. You know, we expect like he was very adamant about like habits, champion habits. And that's something that he really drove in like his presser and his introduction to basically the fans and everything. And in a lot of YouTube videos that I watched of him as well, he was at some like American football coach conference or something like that. Not too long ago, and he talked a lot about the habits of being a champion. And so overall, I think it's awesome that he is right off the rip, like not gonna put up, I guess, with anything less than like championship habit material. On the other hand, I think that's a really interesting way to like introduce yourself to the current roster. Now, maybe those are guys that, and we don't know who it was, and if that, you know, really happened or not, it's all alleged, but it's a really interesting way to introduce yourself to the team. So I like it from like a fan perspective. I really like it a lot from like, this is your first introduction to the players. You know, I get that too. So
yeah, it's a double-edged sword in that, like, You make a statement that, you know, this is my team, these are my rules, and, you know, to quote the movie, I'm the captain now. I don't care the way things were before. I don't care what, you know, what rules were in place before. Like, this is the way things are gonna work underneath me. It's a little harsh, but I mean, I think to a degree you have to send that message early and you have to send it very clearly. And I think that just, he's probably doing some weeding out, if I had to guess too. Who's not going to fit. So let's go ahead and start these conversations and start instilling these ideas in these players' minds ASAP, that if you're not the type of person that's going to flourish in my system, then get in the portal. I mean, so he's not doing the Deion Sanders approach, but it's more of a, I'm going to show you what I'm about. I'm going to show you who I am. That and that's the way I took it. Again, assuming all this is true, which it may not be, but
yeah, absolutely. I took it that way as well. And I think too, he runs, it seems like, and obviously he's got the experience. He's got 6 years of D1 coaching experience, head coaching experience. So he's been around the block. He kind of understands it a little bit better than Walters did, but I feel like, he's very more business minded when it comes to his team. Like, he, from the conversations that are not conversations, but the things that I've read, the videos that I've watched of him and hear him talk about his team, he really, like, his offensive coordinator is in charge of the offense. That is his thing. The defensive coordinator is in charge of the defense. And he doesn't really get involved in that too much at all, it seems like. And then he's just kind of like the general operations manager overseeing everything. And I feel like maybe Walters wasn't like that. It seemed like there was something, I think it was either this year or last year, there was a comment that a player made about how they're starting to take practice more seriously now. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, I do. Yeah.
After like a really bad performance, and it's like, shouldn't you have been taking it seriously this whole time? Like,
yeah, I mean, and there are comments after, I think it was week three, and you know, the coordinators and stuff were evaluating like, are we really putting guys in positions to succeed? And that's what I mean. That, so I don't think we're gonna see anything like that out of this.
That was another thing that he said that I was really happy to hear him say, is he said, you know, you have your scheme, you have your goals for what you want your team to look like, but you have to take what your players can do now, utilize that to the best of utilize their strengths while also being a great teacher and eventually shifting your team to like what your vision of it is. And I think that, at least in my experience, what I can remember, was like an area that to me seemed like Walters struggled with or tended to do the opposite of, put guys in positions that they didn't play before, put guys in schemes that they weren't comfortable with, like Sanusi Kane. He was kind of almost looked like a fish out of water on defense at times last year. And then just like with Kyjern Jenkins being moved to linebacker, now that could have been a depth issue. But just, I think that that was one thing that I was really, really happy to hear him say, because I think that was one thing that that was like a gripe of mine this last year and the year before too.
Yeah. And I think that in the final press conference after the IU game, Gus Hartwig even alluded to that. I forget who it was who asked him, you know, what needs to change for this team to win? And he said, you have to fit the players to a scheme, and you can't force the scheme. And I thought that was really insightful and bold of him to say, but I appreciated it. Because that it was apparent, or was seemingly apparent, with what we saw on the field. And just to have a player come right out and say that, was really, really insightful. And so he talked about, just taking what you have and saying, how do I make a winning product out of this, while also thinking, you know, what am I comfortable with and what do I know the best, and kind of building toward that simultaneously. And it is great to have, it sounds weird, but it's great to have someone who has a history of success and winning at the head coach position, which we just haven't had in a while. So it's not going to be his first rodeo. He's not going to be learning he will continue to learn, but he's not going to be learning the basics, you know, which is cool.
Yeah. And something that I've been thinking about a lot too, because I think a lot of people, myself included, looked at like his record overall initially. And like, you saw the 500 record at Mizzou. And maybe at first you're like, oh, you know, are we really going to improve to that like potential championship caliber team? Of course, we're all like us. What we came from last year, we're all going to be thrilled with a 6-6 record next year. We would be ecstatic. But maybe there was like some hesitation of like, oh, you know, can this guy really like take Purdue past kind of the glass ceiling that we've been stuck at for a while? And something that I've been thinking about is that was his first head coaching, collegiate head coaching gig. So that was his first head coaching gig. So if you want to, again, compare, I said I'm not trying to compare, but I keep doing it. That was his first head coaching gig. He was younger, and he had a 500 record. He eventually, I think his third season, they went 8-5 or 8-6, something like that. And that was in the SEC as well, which we all know that it's just different in the SEC. So
just means more.
Yeah, it just means more. That's what it is. So I'm really excited to just thinking about that. Like, obviously, the Big Ten has started to contend very equally, I feel like, with the SEC. And so this is not his first rodeo. This is not something he's going to be unfamiliar with. I feel like Mizzou is pretty comparable to like Purdue in the, if you want to compare like an SEC school to a Big Ten school. So I feel like he's very well equipped. And it sounds like he's going to be financially backed with whatever he needs, which is very unlike what we've heard over previous seasons and years as Purdue fans. So I'm very excited about that. But one thing I wanted to talk about too, before we wrap up the talking about the presser and everything, was his comment at the very end of his interview with the media. I thought it was really different. He like went out of his way to say like, "Hey, you guys don't know me. I don't know you, but I'm excited to get to know you guys. I really appreciate what you guys do. You're going to help us tell the story of Purdue football." And at least in my memory, I don't remember a coach doing that. So I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really, it definitely caught my attention, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Cause I had it on the background. I was doing some stuff around the house and was listening to it, and you know, everyone was wrapping up and he just said, hold on. Like he stopped everybody from getting up and, you know, took maybe 2 minutes to talk and thank everyone that was there. And, you know, basically say like, I'm excited to work with you. And I think that speaks a lot to his character. I can't ever recall seeing something like that. So I do think you're right there.
Yeah. So it kind of talking about the transfer portal, I guess we could talk both sides of it, what Purdue has lost and you know, what we hope to gain. Obviously, especially our O-line. I mean, that is a huge gaping hole right now. Our O-line, our quarterback room, wide receiver room, a lot of that is potentially or is gone or potentially gone. So what do you feel like is now? I know that like his son and one of his son's teammates flipped from UNLV to Purdue today, but what do you feel like is Coach Odom's like first, or like if you were Coach Odom, what is the first position that you're going to go out there and recruit for hard for in the transfer portal?
That's tough. And my answer may change based on what has happened today. But I think it has to be offensive line. I would have said receiver this morning, but that was before, you know, Musa went in the portal. That was before DJ Wingfield said he was going to the draft. You know, Jalen Grant went in the portal. I feel like Purdue has a deep offensive line, but a lot of that depth just hasn't played a lot. You know, and to quote Drew Brees, the offensive line controls the game. You don't have a good offensive line, it's hard to do anything. It's hard to run the ball. It's hard to pass. And it sounds like he wants to be a run heavy team, was kind of my read on that. You know,
I feel like that too.
Everything revolves around the run. Was I think how he phrased it. So yeah, I think it has to be offensive line. But then a quick turnaround after that, it's got to be receiver in my book. Just
yeah, and I would agree with you too. I would agree with you too, because the offensive line as well, it's not like he can bring Purdue guys back out of the portal. A lot of those guys are graduating. A lot of those guys are going to the NFL. You know, Gus, Marcus, DJ Wingfield. So that's three of our starters right there. So, and then Musa is gone. He's at Louisville now. So yeah, he absolutely needs to get an O-line. Really just at this point, it's like just needing bodies. I don't know the depth of our O-line too much past the starters because they didn't really play. I think that's something we talked about a lot over the year. So it's going to be really interesting. Like, just imagine if these guys that hadn't played all year just end up being this incredible O-line. That's just
we've seen it happen before, though. It is crazy as it sounds skill positions too, with receivers. I can think of some receivers who didn't play a lot under Hazel, and then as soon as Brom came in, were great receivers, and they'd been there the entire time. So it's all about how you go about using them. You know, is really the key there. But it'll be really interesting to see just how everything plays out. Because what do we say, 18 players in the portal as of right now?
I think so. That number, I could be wrong with that. I thought I saw 18 at one point in time somewhere. But one thing that so I've got a little like transfer portal wish list right here that I've been working on. And as far as O-linemen go, I really didn't get to the O-linemen too much. I got really fixated on quarterbacks yesterday when I was doing all this, and spent a lot of my time researching on that. But one that especially that I would really like, especially at center, is Brady Wilson. He is played at UAB, Alabama Birmingham. He's I think ranked third in PFF, like as far as centers go overall. And he's gotten, from what I looked at yesterday, he's gotten some like decent offers, but nothing that really stood out to me. Nothing that I feel like Purdue couldn't match or even do better than. So that's one that really stuck out to me for the O-line. I didn't really get into a whole lot of other O-linemen. One that I saw that a lot of bigger schools are going after is Josh Thompson out of Northwestern as well. So he's gaining he's getting a lot of interest. So unfortunately, O-line, I don't have a ton of names here. I only have the two, but quarterbacks, I've got quite a few names here. Caleb. I love when Caleb comes in here. So we got a comment from Caleb. So late to the party here, guys, but what is your brief feel about Odom? Obviously, we're all rooting for him, but what's your quick feedback on the hire? I like the background and old school natural or nature, but I'm curious what the offensive plan will be if Dean Hart is right, that offensive coordinator probably won't be coming. So, Frank, if you want to take that.
Yeah. We touched on it here a bit, but I like the hire. I'm trying not to get too high right now. I'm probably a bit jaded, and my mindset's probably a bit skewed due to the previous coaching regime, obviously. But, you know, talk is cheap. It's easy to stand up there and say, you know, we're going to be competitive, we're going to win games, and we're going to do it immediately. This is not a rebuild, and it's another thing to actually do it. Right. And not saying he can, not saying he won't. I'm just saying that's when my excitement will start. Right now, I'm just trying, kind of looking at everything with a analytical and I don't want to say skeptical, but open-minded eye. I think is probably the best way to describe my feelings. In terms of the offense, yeah, I mean he's been pretty tight-lipped about what you know, who his staff is. It sounds like he has some guys already ready to go, and some are still in the works. I mean, I know the Brennan Marion is obviously the guy everyone wants due to the innovative offense that he's run there at UNLV. It's actually pretty cool to see. It doesn't sound like where he's going to be coming, and it sounds like he's a candidate for some head coaching jobs. Actually, I mean, given that, I think he's going to want to find someone who runs something similar. Just given that it's what he's had a lot of success with. Now that is a very unique system, but you know, something misdirection heavy with a lot of different, you know, option heavy sort of offense, something with more heavy personnel, I think is what he's had a lot of success with. So I think he's going to look to hire someone who's done that. That's just my opinion, though. We don't know anything at this point concrete.
Yeah. And I'd say to my opinion on the guy too, really liked it. I think I said earlier, he's like, if you put like the characteristics of a coach that you'd want at Purdue into like an AI generator, I think it would kind of spit out Barry Odom. Of course, you know, he is monikered as like this defensive guy. But obviously the proof is in the pudding there. He's had some pretty high powered offenses as well. Like you talked about at UNLV. So I'm excited. I think, and Frankie, I think you mentioned too, like he really didn't back down at all from like, we are going to win. It's going to be a quick change. Did not. And of course, like you, like I said earlier, you want your coach to be positive and you want him to be confident, but he was almost like dead set on like, we are going to be a winning football team next year. Now, what that objective definition of that is for him could be a lot different than it looks like for us. You know, for him, maybe that's 8 wins or something. We would all freak out if we won 8 games next year. We would all be happy if we won 5 or 6 games next year. So I think that it's pretty. I'm excited. I love his confidence. But like, you know, a presser is just a presser. It's easy to win the press conference, but it's all about when game day happens and all that. And he did make comment too that a lot of his players are, or not a lot of his players, sorry, a lot of his coaches are coaching in bowl games or even in the college football playoff, which is, you know, something that piqued my interest as well. So I'm excited.
I'd be curious to see how all that unfolds, just given these guys are in bowl games and the timing and all that. And obviously we have to know who our coordinators are before we can worry about recruits staying. I mean, so there's a lot of order of operations, and I'm glad I'm not having to make those decisions.
Yeah. And that's one, I think that was a question that I had for you maybe earlier, but it slipped my mind, is that, you know, the way that he's starting at Purdue, at least from what information's being given to us through the media, is very different than Coach Walters. Coach Walters hit the ground running. I think he flew to Texas like that next day, yeah, or the same day, and got picked up Hudson Card. Whereas it seems like, anyway, Odom, he's coming to Purdue. He's trying to get a feel for like the university, meeting people, talking to students, wanting to get to know his players that he currently has right now. He's also putting together his team. So I'm wondering, you know, because there's so much push for like, we got to do this now. We got to hurry up. We got to do it all. But it seems like he's really taking his time. So I'm wondering, and it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like come, you know, this time 9 months from now, when we're getting ready for our first game. So it's like starting out slow and steady to build a good foundation. Is that the formula? And then you go out and recruit and do your thing? Or is it, you know, you hit the ground running as soon as possible and try to get everybody in here as quickly as possible? So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's a lot of differences between just the circumstances as a whole between when Walters was hired and when Odom was hired. And I mean, to be fair to Walters, he's Barry Odom's coming in a much better situation, to be honest. Financially,
really is.
Yeah. Our expectations are super low. I mean, it's gotta be hard to take over as a head coach when you're coming off of a Big Ten championship. It's just gotta be mm-hmm. hard, because that's where your expectations are. That's where the bar has now been set. Now our bar is much lower. So we're, like I said, 5-6 wins. We're most of us at least are thrilled. Yeah. Whereas, you know, 5-6 wins first year after Braum, we're probably a little bit disappointed. So just a lot better situation. And, you know, Babinski, you know, basically said that they're committed financially and they're just going to give money as needed.
Yeah. Like a blank checkbook, basically. So, and then Caleb has another comment here. He says, I also found Odom saying it'll happen quickly is fascinating, because many coaches don't try to put those kind of statements out there early on, which lead to possibly unreasonable expectations. So he's putting it on himself early. I feel the exact same way. I was very, you know, he really stuck to his guns about that. And there was no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, it's going to happen soon.
And he said the same thing at UNLV. I watched some of his pressers from his early in his tenure there. He said the same thing there. He said, we are going to win, and we're going to win quickly. So I don't know if he said that at Missouri or not. I couldn't find anything going back that far, but yeah, maybe said the same thing then. But that's it's interesting to put it all out there like that. I mean, it's you're gonna put it out there. I mean, and kudos to him for holding himself accountable.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's gonna be really exciting to just see the staff that he can piece together, especially if allegedly money is no object now. For Purdue football, which has never been the case before. So it's going to be really interesting to see what he can build in 9 months. And he talked too about like, he has a 12-month plan. Like, he's got, like, he seems just very, it seems like he's had like a binder with like this plan in his, you know, safe at home for like the last 3 years now or something. Like, he's got it all figured out. It seems just very like he knows what's coming next before anybody else does.
It's almost like he's been preparing for a while, which, no, who knows?
Yeah.
who knows?
Absolutely. But to get back to, so some quarterbacks, that I really like, that I would like to come to Purdue. Where'd it go? So I've got Mikey Keene here from, Fresno State. He thought he had a really good game against us last year in the opening game of the season. I don't know why. I thought he was a better runner than what he was. And I looked up his stats. I think he's in his career ran for like negative 379 yards. So he is not the runner that I thought. I don't know why. I thought he was like quick and shifty and stuff, but he was not the runner that that I thought he was.
Oh yeah, got a comment here from Caleb asking about the cell phone and the first meeting. Yeah, we did touch on that briefly, Caleb, and I think Damon and I both agreed that it's definitely different, and we like it. I mean, it's you have to make it known that this is your team and you're the captain and what you say goes, and I think that's a good way to do it, and I think it's a good way to weed out people who maybe aren't going to flourish in that system. So you have to put it out there early. You have to put it out there clearly. And I think I fully support him doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then a couple other guys, obviously Ryan Brown would be great to return to Purdue. Frank and I were talking earlier. We just feel like, you know, he could really develop well under this offense. I don't know that it's pending that Brendan Marion is the offensive coordinator. It feels like it's more of like what Barry Odom is looking for anyway. Is that kind of running that play style? So I think Ryan Brown could really flourish in this. And then guys that are in the portal, dude, if I had to create like a top four wish list here, be Devin Dampier from New Mexico. I think he's probably going to go to Utah because I think their head coach is the offensive coordinator at Utah now. Anthony Colandria from Virginia. He had a really good year. He got benched the last game of the season. Not sure why. But he also had, he had like 500 and some rushing yards, I think, this year as well. So I think he could do well. And then Thomas Castellanos from Boston College. I think he's another one that can run the ball, can throw the ball. It's kind of a package deal there. So if I had a wish list for quarterback at Purdue next year, it's going to be one of those guys.
Yeah. So to be honest, you know, Castellanos I'm familiar with, and Mikey Keene I'm familiar with. I've watched them play, but outside the rest of those are names I didn't recognize. But I know you wanted to prioritize guys who were more of the dual threat, right? Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just because it seems like that's what Odom does well with is guys that can run, but also be able to throw the ball. You know, like he said, he believes that the run creates the vertical pass option there. So I think having quarterbacks that can run, that can understand how to do a read option, and can also throw the ball pretty well, or at least decently, I think is kind of the formula for a successful Barry Odom offense. So I was going to put Matthew Sluka on this list, but I don't know if that's something that would even be possible. It seems like both sides are unsure of like what really happened. One, you know, Sluka is saying that he was promised all these things. Seems like Odom's more of like, I have no idea. If that was the case, then that's wrong what happened to him. But he's like, it was handled by our legal team or whatever he had said.
Well, so, you know, that's going to be brought up in every recruiting visit too. And so, like I said, no one knows what happens. You know, there's the reality is probably somewhere in the middle. Sluka said that he was promised NIL money that he didn't get. UNLV said they gave him everything he was promised, and there was some sort of, I mean, so don't really know what happened, but yeah, someone had the gumption to ask that today in the press conference. I'm glad they did, because I was thinking it the whole time. I was wondering if someone was going to ask that, but he basically said they did everything by the book, and you know, he is more than willing to talk about that and clear up any confusion there on recruiting visits. Caleb says we also need more home run running backs if you want to set up the pass. We haven't had many home run backs in a while. Love Mock, but that isn't him. He's a lead back, not a home run guy. Yeah, I mean, so I'm assuming you mean like a, you know, more small, speedy guy. I mean, I think if we do try to run something similar to what Brendan Marion is running, that's with or without him. It's interesting they use that kind of sidecar formation where they have the two running backs right next to one another, right next to the quarterback. And they have a lot of those home run plays. They have a lot of those 30, 40 yard gains because there's so much misdirection, but you need a quarterback who is able to make those reads and make the appropriate decision. And a lot of the, you know, it's a triple option with an RPO as well. So if things break down on the run, you can always like chip it out on a bubble screen. So it's really cool. I hope we can do something cool, but it's crazy to think about like the dichotomy from, let's say, Jeff Brohm to what we're likely about to see, where Jeff Brohm threw the ball on like 70% of plays at Purdue. I think it's maybe between 68 and 72 last time I checked. And now, I mean, UNLV, they ran the ball on 66% of plays last season. So just that stark contrast there in such a short period of time is going to be really interesting to see, assuming that offensive trend from Barry Odom continues.
Yeah. And I think that is the kicker for me of like not being 100% in, because, you know, when Walters was hired, it was, oh, he's a defensive minded guy. Typically Purdue succeeds with offensive minded coaches. Clearly it didn't work out. And then you've got Odom, who's very run heavy. I mean, Purdue is typically very pass heavy. So again, it's not to say that it can't work or that it won't work, but it's just one of those you just have to wait to see if it does work. And thankfully, we have two games to really test it out and, you know, see it come to fruition in hopefully a really positive way with, I believe, the opening game is against Ball State and then Southern Illinois after that. So two games to really figure out what our identity is going to be. They probably know that before the game start at the beginning of the year, but two games to really like hash out what this team can do, hopefully, anyway.
I do want to say, Cody, welcome back. Good to have you back. Let us know what you think of the coaching hire. And then Caleb clarified he's talking to Raheem Mostert, type of running back, which, yeah, that guy that can go all the way every time he put the ball in his hands. And yeah, I do agree. Mostert was a little underutilized or not utilized properly. I think when he was at Purdue, he was the fastest player in college football, if I recall correctly.
That's crazy.
And we couldn't find a way to win games with him. Sad.
There was a guy that I was really sad. He came to Purdue under the Brohm era, and I was really sad that he never got to play much. And that was it Michael Moore? He ended up transferring to Texas, and he was like, but he also did, he was also like track and field, and he was insanely fast. He won like a ton of awards in track and field while he was at Purdue, and then he left and he went to Texas after that. There's something more.
Yeah. Marcellus Moore.
Marcellus. Yeah.
Yeah. Marcellus Moore. Insanely okay. Fast. Yeah. Yeah. He was, yeah. He was a DB, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I and then like I was thinking about wide receivers in the portal, but it's weird to say, but I don't know if like obviously you want to have a good wide receiver. You need to have a good wide receiver to have a successful offense, but I don't know how important in like an elite wide receiver is. Just somebody that can get open downfield.
I've done a lot of looking into Brandon Marion's offense. Just, you know, under the assumption that he's coming to Purdue along with Barry Odom. Don't know if that's true or not, but his offense is centered around only needing one deep threat. And that was okay. The reason that he designed it. He kind of designed his offense to be run for teams that are kind of physically outmatched. So if you have one deep threat to basically clear out space, then you can run all this misdirection underneath. Is kind of the central philosophy behind it. Now, obviously, he's a former receiver, so he wants to throw more, but his offense can work, according to him, with just one deep threat. Obviously, I want Purdue to have as many deep threats as they can get, but that's just an interesting thing to keep in mind there as things unfold and we talk about potential offensive coordinators and offensive schemes, but...
Yeah, I'm really excited to see just the whole team that he puts together. I'm really excited to see what he comes up with there. And it sounds like potentially that I don't remember what his name is. He currently works at Purdue in recruiting. Something Key. He used to play at Mizzou when Odom was the head coach. And I think now he's like he works in recruiting and scouting for Purdue. So I wonder if he's going to end up staying on the roster just because they have that previous relationship or not. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah.
And so how do you feel about Coach Odom and Coach Walters' relationship?
I think it's cool that they have so much experience together. I think somebody on social media and maybe even Odom said during one of his interviews that he actually contacted Walters about the job and everything, or they've talked, you know, since he's taken on the role as head coach, which I think is cool. I think that Walters can provide that insight, but I think Frank, you made a good point of like hoping that he doesn't, I think you said like fully latch on to Walters' view of his players and
he can't let it like he can't let it blind his vision, you know. Okay, this guy has these strengths and weaknesses. This guy has those strengths and weaknesses. I'll keep what you said in mind as I evaluate players. I think it needs to be the mentality and not take it as fact. And I'm sure, you know, he's an experienced guy. I'm sure he won't, but you know, I think it's commendable of Walter to do that and to have those conversations. He certainly didn't have to, but I mean, obviously you don't, you want, they have a good relationship. But it's just an interesting predicament, interesting scenario to, you know, to have a guy now get hired who's basically at one point in time the quote unquote mentor of Ryan Walters. So it's just it is odd, but I find it strange that those two, he's been open about the fact that they've had conversations and talked about the roster and talked about Purdue. But it's good because there won't be any surprises. This is my main takeaway from it.
Yeah. And I think I was listening to the Boiled Sports Report, Boiled Sports Podcast, the Handsome Hour, I was listening to it this morning. And Jay Money made a really good point of like, you know, there's a coaches are like college coaches are like a fraternity. You know, they talk all the time. They have each other's back. That's why you could see a coach have a really down year and then get picked up almost immediately by another school because they've got that, you know, support there. And so there absolutely is like no, like Odom definitely called around. Was like, hey, what do you think about this job? You know, what definitely got the input from guys around the country, I'm sure. So he absolutely knows what he's coming and getting into, but it sounds like, at least from the stuff that Babinski is saying, that Chang is saying, that this is going to be, I hate to say it because it sounds so cheesy, but it's going to be different this time because of the financial backing that football is now going to have.
And if some of the numbers that Walters threw out in his exit interview, I'll call it, are accurate, you know, I almost feel bad. You know, if it is true that when he first showed up on campus, Purdue had $400,000 in NIL money. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't know if that's true or not, but it's interesting.
I was gonna say, to me, that doesn't the math doesn't math there because he went out and picked up Hudson Card for almost $1 million.
Yeah, I think it's the key differentiation there is the way that he said it, and that's like when he arrived on campus. And so did it change like within a day of him arriving on camp? Maybe. It probably did. But that's, you know, because the NIL was kind of still becoming a thing. It was still kind of in its infancy, but in its teenage years, we'll say, that point in time. Well, you want to go to commercial real quick and then we can switch gear and talk about basketball?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let me figure out how to. I should have this ready to go, but I don't. But see everyone back here in about 2 minutes once we hear from our awesome sponsors, and we'll flip gears, talk about basketball.
Tell me, do you like to be fashionable? Do you like to look handsome or beautiful? Do you like being the best dressed Purdue fan you know? Well, guess what? We got just the place for you. It's called MartinVintage.com. And if you go there, you will find the best in Purdue throwback designs on the market. I'm telling you, if you want it, they got it. Basketball, football, Purdue Pete logos, anything and everything. And if you go to martinvintage.com and use code BXB at checkout, they'll throw you 10% off your order. Now, that's a great deal if you ask me. Tell them that we sent you, and they'll say, hey, you have a slightly above average taste in podcasts. Here's 10% because they're friends of the program and we can't thank them enough. Again, martinvintage.com. Use code BXP at checkout for 10% off.
Attention all college basketball enthusiasts. Are you tired of just watching the game and ready to dive deeper into the stats and strategies that make college basketball so thrilling? Introducing CBBAnalytics.com, your ultimate destination for college basketball analytics. With CBBAnalytics.com, you'll have access to the stats and insights that you need to take your love for the game to the next level. From shooting percentages to player efficiency ratings, CBBAnalytics.com has it all. Get detailed player profiles, in-depth team analysis, player and team shot charts, and even in-game trends available all at your fingertips. Do you want to know how well Purdue shoots above the break threes with 10 or fewer seconds left on the shot clock? CBBAnalytics has you covered. You want to see how different lineups perform in different situations? CBBAnalytics.com has you covered. You can get a free tier subscription, which allows you to see stats for just one team. But if you truly want to elevate your game knowledge, be sure to check out the Pro Tier subscription, which allows access to all 362 Division I teams. One of our favorite features is the in-game streaming system, which displays real-time stats, analytics, and even shot charts during live games. If you're ready to expand your basketball knowledge, check out CBBAnalytics.com today.
Love that.
And then shout out to Cincy Blitzboards as well. Go get your Blitzboard.
Check them out. They're awesome. One quick comment here from Nick. Apparently Purdue is backing NIL, investing $20.1 million into football alone. Would love to know more about that. Hopefully that's true, because that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think Babinski, that was a question that somebody asked him, like, in the presser of, like, what exactly does that look like? You know, what's the, like, they wanted exact details about where all the money's going, and he wouldn't give that, but he did say it's, you know, around the ballpark of like $20.5 million that they're willing to allocate towards.
I think towards that was all that, so all sports, I think, is it was my takeaway at least. Every school has the same cap. They can't spend more than $20.5 million in NIL, but I'm sure there are ways around that. Some of the numbers I've heard are far above that. So,
right.
Yeah. Well, as more information comes to light, we'll be sure to talk about that. But basketball, I think we left off last week briefly touching on Penn State. Purdue played Penn State. Damon, what'd you think about that game?
Yeah, that's a burn the tape game. I think that was the game that what we talked about before the season started of like, this team is going to have real, games that they should probably win, they're going to lose, and it might look ugly. And I think that was an example of what that is, or what that could look like. Just a lot of turnovers, just a lot of ugly. It felt like nobody was on the same page for a lot of that game. So I think that was just one of those games that we talked about that's probably going to happen this year, and we got it out of the way in December. So I'm excited about that. Just got it out of the way. It does make me wonder how well this team can play on the road. I know that technically they've won on a neutral site. I don't count that as a true road game. But both true road games that they have played in, they've lost by 15 plus. So, which again, they've played really good opponents in Marquette and Penn State, but it does make me wonder how well this team can play on the road.
Yeah, I think, if you were to tell me before the game, Purdue has 24 turnovers, I would have said that's probably a 30-point loss. And the fact that, you know, Purdue had 24 turnovers and only lost by 11, I see that as a win. And I mean, obviously you don't want to turn the ball over 24 times. You don't turn the ball over 12 times, but let's just, like, right, if we hypothetically say like Purdue has a bad outing, they turn the ball over 17 times, 24 is really bad, but let's just say it's bad, we curve that back to 7. Purdue's probably in a situation where they can win this game. I mean, it's to me, that's the way I think about it. I mean, you think about there are 24 times where Purdue came down the court, didn't even take a shot, gave the ball directly back to Penn State. How many points off turnovers did they have in this game? Which,
oh gosh, it's probably a lot.
It's I'll tell you here, it's not. I'm not a huge fan of points off turnovers because it's kind of a silly stat, but because possessions alternate, but they had 32 points off of turnovers in the game.
Wow. Yeah.
So if you were to tell me those, like, those two things in isolation, I assume it's a 30 plus point loss. But I think that Painter did an interesting thing at the end. He played with some different lineups. I can talk about the lineups here. So, you know, the last like 7 minutes of the game were CJ Cox was on the floor the entire time. We saw Waddell for 7 straight minutes. We saw Berg for 7 straight minutes. And that lineup did some good things. I mean, CJ Cox already scored 7 or so straight. Will Berg was plus 14 on the game. So that, to me, I thought that was interesting. And that Painter said, I imagine he said, this game's over, it's in the bag, let's see who steps up and put those guys out there. And I think that in the Maryland game, we saw, from my perspective, CJ Cox get a little bit of those minutes that we have seen kind of allocated toward Jakari Harris early this season. So, I think that, you know, Purdue played the worst possible game they could have played. And the fact that they only lost by 11, I see that as a positive thing. Now, I mean, obviously you want them to play better, you want them to win, but, I just see this as a game that you have to take that as one positive thing away. But Andrew got a technical too, which is crazy.
Yeah. What exactly did he get the technical for? Was it for, it was, I know it was right after, I think TKR got like manhandled, right?
TKR got fouled pretty hard twice. And then there was that blatantly missed possession call where it went right off of Niederhauser's hand. And I mean, I don't know what Painter did. I think he, you know, just said something and they teed him up. They also teed up Ace Baldwin for doing exactly what Braden Smith does when he hits a three, which I thought was kind of silly as well.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, you have Derek Queen, talking smack to the Purdue student section, nothing. And, you know, again, in the Maryland game, it just that whole sequence was weird. I thought.
Yeah, it was super weird. And, I think that the Bryce Jordan Center just sucks. It does. It's so big for a college basketball arena. And I'm not saying that Purdue lost because they played in a crappy stadium or arena or anything, but I feel like that always plays a part in how Purdue plays at the Bryce Jordan Center. Not that, it's just such a, I mean, it's a completely stark difference from Mackey Arena and most of the Big Ten schools that they will go and play at. So stark. So I always like, that's something I always hang my hat on a little bit too. When we play Penn State is I'm like, oh, it's not because Penn State was better. It's because their arena sucks and it's boring.
Historically, Purdue doesn't play well there. That's normally an arena where Purdue seems to walk away with a 5-point or four-point win, and you know they were favored by 12. Mm-hmm. You know, that it just seems like the place where you expect Purdue to win by a lot, and they barely eke out a win. You know, this time obviously it didn't work that way, but I think the fact that it is fairly quiet in there and it's just a very different type of arena could definitely mess with some guys.
Yeah, and what I love too about Coach Painter is that he won't save face for anybody. Now, he won't like specifically call guys out and say like, oh, Braden really screwed up tonight, or oh, this guy really didn't play well. He'll just say like, yeah, I just love that he will flat out say, you know, Penn State played harder. They wanted it more. They played harder. They played better. He will not save face for his own team. He won't be like, yeah, it was just an off night. You know, we'll get back to it. He's very blunt about it too, which I really like about him.
Caleb says the counter, we had to have that high pressure supreme size, but you need some trump move to attack pressure or dribble in the post or back cutting. Yeah, I mean, one thing I noticed when I went back and rewatched that game was that Purdue tried to get the ball out of Braden's hands quickly on those blitzes and traps and tried to get it into Trey Kaufman Wren's hands to sort of shift that decision-making responsibility into him on that short roll. And the decision making just wasn't as crisp as what we've seen. And in that scenario, you have a 4-on-3, you have the ball underneath the trap, and you have two guys on the ball handler who just got rid of the ball. You have to be able to either, you know, score or spray. And I just think he's been really good all season, even the following game against Maryland, at either scoring or passing it to somebody. And he had just had a lot of hesitation, which allowed the defense to rotate back, and they had the size to give him some trouble. As we saw in the paint. So to me, that was the big thing that stuck out. And there were a lot of opportunities where Braden passed up some shots. It's hard to criticize Braden too much, but we saw against in the Maryland game, like he's got to shoot when those little pockets are there. And we just didn't see that against Penn State. And this, a lot of the turnovers were just unforced. We're just messing up dribble handoffs, you know, and Painter just said no one was Chris. There were guys, you know, driving to the wrong side, guys didn't know the play. So the issues were probably beyond what we saw as a fan. But yeah, I just think that, you know, Purdue came out against Maryland and looked like they had learned from it. Not very many turnovers in that game. What were the total? I'll tell you here.
Yeah, it wasn't very many. And I mean, that second half, they played almost flawlessly.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, I guess we'll transition to that game. Painter talked about it, and I noticed it in the game, that Purdue missed a lot of open shots, a lot of really good shots in the first half. And in the second half, they kind of made up for it. Like, they hit a higher percentage than they probably should have in the second half. But there were a lot of open threes that didn't go down in the first half.
Yeah, I think they shot, 61 or 63% from the field in the second half?
Let's see. It'll tell me something like that. Yeah, I think it was 62%. Yeah, in the second half, which is 38% from three in that game, which in the first half, it didn't seem. I think we missed six straight to start the game. But mm-hmm. yeah, and I think the big thing defensively in the Maryland game was Derek Queen hitting the first two threes of his career back to back, at least for me. And what's interesting is that he just started chucking them after that. And I think that really helped Purdue win the game because he was shooting them in transition. It was just like he saw a couple go in, like he wanted to put that game away and he missed them. And now it's just a quick in and, you know, down and out for Maryland, and allowed Purdue to get out and allowed Purdue to run in that game. And I think that Purdue looked to push the pace a little bit more against Maryland, but that was a good game. Derek Queen's an insane player.
Very good.
12 rebounds. Didn't like him, saying the things he did to the paint crew, but neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a thought and it just left. Oh, man. Dang it.
That's all right. Maybe it'll come back. So yeah, let's talk about Braden here. So Caleb has a comment about Braden. No fault of Braden. But if he's 6'3", that pressure isn't the same because he can pass over a lot of it. So it's a combination of pressure and smaller guards to miss the skip pass or attack the hedge better. Yeah, and on the hedge note, I mean, one thing Braden's done a lot this season is he's kind of outrun the hedge when that second defender kind of slides out to push him toward the half court line. He kind of runs around it, but then he looks to pass, and Braden's a great passer. He's a good distributor. It's probably his best attribute, but he just needs to look to score a little bit more. And there are a lot of shots he could have taken in that Penn State game. And he did in the Maryland game, and we saw he had 24 points in that game.
And I just loved watching Trick Hoffman run in that second half. I feel like he really dominated a lot of ways, different ways in the post, in that second half especially. And it's just so fun to watch him because I feel like is just growing each game that he plays. Because one thing I always like struggled with about TKR was I felt like, especially when the game would first start, when he would like take his first couple of shots, it's almost like he was sending a rocket to the moon. Like it was like he would just shoot it really hard, or it would just bounce off the goal. Like it just felt like he was putting way too much power behind it. But I feel like he's starting to find his rhythm, finding his touch, and he's also just, man, he can bully anybody in the paint. It feels like putting up Zach Edey numbers some games, and it's really just it's a lot of fun.
And we're seeing a little bit more emotion from Trey Kaufman, Ren, it seems. Like, I think about the Penn State game. I mean, he looked like for a while there, he was possessed in the second half. And
yeah,
I mean, you saw him yelling at the ref about bad calls, and we saw him getting foul trouble against Maryland. And he was showing some emotion on the bench. It looked like he was maybe punching the bench, or he was picking up a towel or throwing it. And like to see him just curb that a little bit more.
Or at least harness it in a different way.
Harness it in a different way. Yeah. Take it out in the post. We're just seeing him materialize. I've always known he was a good post player. We're really just seeing him materialize as a decision maker. There was one play where he had the ball in the post and Braden cut directly to the basket, and you can hear Braden screaming for the ball. It's really funny, but you can actually hear Braden actually yelling like, "Yo, I'm open." And it would have been a tough pass, not an impossible pass, but he kind of looks and he brings the ball back down, and Braden's got his hands up like, "Hey man, you just missed me on a cut," but he just methodically works his way to the basket for an easy basket. And I think that wasn't out of selfishness. That was, okay, what's like the best decision I can make here right now? And I could gamble on a risky pass over my shoulder, or I can just do what I'm good at and score over my right hand, which is what he did. So we're seeing him really materialize in front of us.
And then somebody else who had a really good game that's, I think, again, has also continued to just steadily improve, and that's Cam Heidi. Thought he had a great game. Loved that dunk towards the end of the game in the second half there. I feel like it was kind of like the nail in the coffin where he got the and one.
Against the press break with a minute to go. Yeah. Caleb hit the nail on the head here. I'd like to see more baseline drives from Heidi and Colvin. Agreed. They both have great finishing ability, which we just haven't seen yet. And I feel like, you know, between Heidi and Colvin, it's just pick one. One's going to have a good game. One's going to kind of be more of a role player. And it's just going to seesaw back and forth all season. And I'm okay with that, as long as they're okay with that. Yeah, Cam had a really good game offensively, defensively. You know, CJ Cox had a few turnovers, but looked really good from a ball handling perspective. Just a good all around team performance. We haven't talked about Fletcher Lawyer. Looked really good. What was he? 3 for 7 from three, so 43% on the day. All of his threes were just kind of daggers, though. They really were, you know, demoralizing threes. And, you know, a couple more of those go down, it's a whole different story.
Yeah, I love the picture. I think Purdue basketball shared of the reaction of Maryland's coaching staff when Fletcher got wide open for three. They all knew it was going down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how we lead that guy open. But Maryland's got a really good team. And mm-hmm. I think Purdue was a little fortunate that Julian Reese fouled out pretty early. You know, he's a guy who's given Purdue trouble in the past and is very athletic and skilled. But it's a team that I'm glad we don't play him again, to be honest. I feel like a game against them could get ugly. And it just, you know, it's the Big Ten this season. I know we say it every year, but anyone can beat anyone. You know, Purdue was handled by Penn State and Penn State just lost to Rutgers. It's anyone's game any night. So I'm glad we don't play them again.
Yeah. But we do have two games coming up this week, I think.
Just one.
But it is a big game though. It's the Indy Classic, right?
Very big game. Yeah. The Indy Classic, Purdue plays Texas A&M. I know they are ranked. Don't know what they're ranked. I can tell you what they are in KenPom though, which is more important in my opinion. In KenPom, they are 24th. Some numbers on them. They are 12th in adjusted defense, 46th in adjusted offense. Let's see some other interesting numbers. They are the best offensive rebounding team in the country, which is something that scares me about this game. KenPom does predict a 2-point Purdue win, but yeah, I mean, we're playing against the team who they are rebounding 43% of their missed shots. And, you know, those are wow. Purdue numbers from previous seasons.
Right, right. Yeah, and I do think, though, I think that's something that Purdue has improved on. It feels like, anyway, just from the eyeball test, which we know is way better than any kind of data or statistics that you can bring up here. No, I'm just kidding.
It is. Purdue is improving at rebounding throughout this season.
Caleb has a comment here, said, I thought Gillespie was going to go for 25 after the first few minutes, but he kind of toned down for the huge chunk in the middle of the game. He has a good looking shot with that high arc and some nice off the dribble moves. Knew nothing about him before. Yeah, I totally agree. Same here.
Yeah, Robbie Hummel made the Steph Curry comparison, and that's not far off, especially from the way he shoots. I mean, there are some of his shots that are just rainbows, you know, total opposite of Carson Edwards. His shots were like as line drive as you can get. A couple other things here about Texas A&M. They're not a good three-point shooting team. They're 30% on the season. They don't shoot a lot of threes. They're 223rd in three-point attempt rate. Only 27% of their points come from three. So they're just not a team who tries to shoot a lot from the perimeter. So again, expect them to shoot like
45%. I was going to say they're going to go like, yeah.
But they're turning their opponents over a lot. They're turning their opponents over one out of every five possessions, and they throw all sorts of defensive looks out there. They press a lot. In some games this season, they've pressed as many as 27 times and as few as three. They'll play a lot of man. They'll play a lot of zone. Their press isn't necessarily to turn people over. It's more just to kind of slow you down. So they're doing more of a half court trap. But when you look at the numbers against the, compared to when they press versus when they play man, they're actually a much better half-court man defensive team than they are press defensive team. So, you know, when we look at the number of times they've pressed per game, early in the season it was 26, 27, and you see that slowly dwindle down. And I just wonder if they're trying to get away from that because it just hasn't worked as well. But this is going to be a grinder. This is going to be a tough game. I think the biggest advantage Purdue has is that it's going to be in Indianapolis, where in years past, it's been, you know, just an extension of Mackey. But I don't know how you
I think you're going to be at the game too, right?
I am, yeah. I mean, I'm really excited to go there. But nice. I don't know, what do you think, Damon? How are you feeling about this one?
Yeah, I mean, I love Indianapolis is I feel like just a home court advantage for Purdue big time, especially when our opponents come in all the way from Texas, because why would, you know, IU and Notre Dame want to play in the Indy Classic?
Yeah, and Butler's even playing too.
Right, right. So I think we've got the home court advantage there. So I think it'll be a good game. Interested to see how the rebounding battle turns out, but I really think that I think Trey Kaufman Wren's going to have a big game. I really do. I think that the offense is going to run a lot through him in this game. I don't have any particular reason as to why. It's just a gut feeling. And so I'm really excited to see how Saturday turns out. I think it's going to be a really good game, really fun atmosphere, because I think Purdue fans are going to pack out Gainbridge Fieldhouse, so should be a good time.
And they bring back some guys, Texas A&M does, who have played in the Big Ten. So Pharrell Payne, who came over from Minnesota, and then CJ Wilcher, who came over from Nebraska. So those two guys are familiar with playing against Painter and knowing how he likes to run his offense, so there'll be a slight advantage there for those guys. Caleb's comment here, he said the rebounding improvement has been all Colvin and Heidi. Yeah, those two guys rebound very, very well. And I mean, they make tough rebounds too. They make the athletic rebounds, and he said they'll get heavy minutes. I agree with that completely. This will probably be a game where those two guys are on the floor a lot. And especially, you know, when you look at Texas A&M on paper, they have a lot of guys in that 6'4 to 6'8 range. They don't have anyone taller than 6'8 too. So Purdue may have a slight, I mean, what is Trey Kaufman ran 6'9 and a half, 6'10. So Purdue may have a slight size advantage at times, but they're going to play a more versatile, you know, interchangeable style, and Purdue's probably going to need to match that at times. And that's why I think we are going to see Heidi and Colvin in there. Heidi's been around 30 minutes plenty, but I think Colvin might too this time because of the rebounding. Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that. And in terms of guarding their go-to guard, I think there's two. There's Zurich Phillips and Wade Taylor are kind of their two leading scorers. So I imagine he'll be kind of switching back and forth between those two. Which one actually leads the team in scoring, though? That's a good question. Let you know here. So yeah, they're pretty similar. Wade Taylor, 16 points per game. Zurich Phillips, 13. So those are going to be the two guys that I imagine we're going to see Heidi and Colvin getting giving a lot of attention to. But KenPom predicts a 2-point win. Damon, do you feel like that's a lot? That's about right.
No, I think that Purdue may even beat that out a little bit. I could see like a 5 or 6, 7 point win, just because of. I'm really just banking all of that on the neutral court, but I think it's going to be very heavily Purdue based. So I think the guy's going to be really comfortable playing in that kind of an environment. I think that gives Purdue the 6 to 7 point advantage rather than just 2 points.
Yeah, I think that I can see Purdue winning this game by 5, so long as Purdue doesn't harm themselves in that being turned the ball over too much. So long as Purdue, you know, can maybe get 5, 6, 7 offensive rebounds and, you know, steal some points that way. So long as Purdue can get out and transition and not let them set their defense. And I trust Painter, PJ, all the assistant coaches to have a good game plan in place. But just interesting when you look at Texas A&M's shot chart, you know, a ton of their shots are at the rim. 40% of their shots are at the rim. And the D1 average is 30. So they're 10% above D1 average. So they're going to look to attack the rim. I'll be curious to see what Purdue does to defend that here. So Caleb says, tell me your thoughts. This is a game in my mind. I think Lawyer seems so exposed, but in those, he always seems to stand out the most. The skinny kid against the super athlete, just finding angles and hitting shots. I wouldn't normally say history says, but Lawyer loves games like this. I mean, I think about the Indy Classic last year, you know, against Arizona, where, you know, Arizona was maybe the most athletic team Purdue played, maybe outside of Tennessee. And I mean, what do you have, 27? Because, you know, Edie and Braden Smith and those guys are getting all the attention and kicking it out to Fletch. So I can definitely see it. I can definitely see Fletcher being the kind of X factor in this game. But it's a great thing about this team. They're very balanced. We can attack in multiple ways. And I think that that they're going to have a good game plan. But I'm excited. I'm really excited to get to go to this game for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be a really good one. So you'll have to send us some pictures from from your seats and everything. And if you guys see Frank at the game, give him a holler. Tell him to give you some random stat that only he would know about Purdue basketball. And
I think I'm in section 13. So
And then before we wrap up here, one thing that I was thinking about, just with the new football coach being hired on, you think Painter's like probably heard about what he's making pretty, I mean, I'm sure Painter doesn't care, but heard about how Coach Odom's just coming in, making $6 million a year when Purdue just went to a national championship last year and he's making 4.85.
I mean, if I'm Painter, I'm asking for a raise for sure.
Right.
No, I mean, football, well, I don't know if football, just not necessarily at Purdue, but as a whole, generates more revenue than basketball. Because yeah. basketball, you have yeah, more I mean, games, but there are fewer people. Yeah. So I don't know how at all. But yeah, Painter deserves a raise no matter how much he's making. It's not enough.
Right.
But yeah, I wonder that as well.
Just guy walks in first day. He's like, hey, I make more money than you. All right. But all right, guys. Well, thank you all for tuning in tonight. It was my first time. I think this is the first time I've ever done a two-man show in the history of the Boiler Express podcast, which I think we're also super close to our 100th episode. So that should be coming up here in the next few weeks, I think. So that's really exciting.
Crazy.
Exciting to see how what culminates with football in the next week or so, at least with like filling out the staff, seeing how they hit the transfer portal, what kind of guys they can bring in. And really just seeing how all that plays out. Obviously, we're not going to be able to see the true ramifications of all that until next, August when we take the field, when Purdue football takes the field again. But it's still exciting to see and to follow along in the offseason. So excited for that. I think we're all excited for Barry Odom, what he can do. And then we're excited for a Purdue basketball game this weekend where hopefully they get a win against a ranked opponent in a neutral court. And if you guys are in Indianapolis, go to the game, say hey to Frank and have a good time and boiler up, hammer down.
Boiler ups, get the win.
Oh, yeah.
The end.